Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who's also the co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, but we begin with a thoroughly depressing update on one of our bad martinis from yesterday, and that is that the House of Representatives this Friday morning has overwhelmingly passed the omnibus bill, 316 to 113. Even more depressing, Republicans not only provided the necessary votes to get this over the top, a majority, a strong majority of Republicans did so, 150 to 95 among Republicans. And Jim, a lot of the usual suspects here who just don't want to see the government shut down, committee chairs, people with a lot of government employees in their districts. But some conservatives in here, too, that really surprised me. Tom Price is now a budget committee chairman. Maybe that had to factor into it, but he supported it. Bill Huizenga in Michigan. David Jolly, running for Senate in Florida, voted for this. Ron DeSantis in Florida, who's also running for Senate, did not. Barry Loudermilk, a very strong conservative, or at least ran as one in Georgia, voted for this. And even Joe Wilson and the chairman of the Republican Study Committee, Bill Flores, voted for this. So some surprising numbers here. Bigger margin than expected, and plenty of frustration headed into Christmas.
You know, Greg, there are two ways to look at this. Conceivably, we're wrong, that actually this was not as bad an omnibus bill as we thought, that you could be a Republican and a fairly conservative one, look at this, conclude it's the best deal you're going to get, and go for it and vote for it with few regrets. The alternate explanation is we got a lot of guys up there who are just tired of having this fight and just want to get it over with and don't care about spending levels. Guess which way I come down?
I guess you're leaning towards B, which is exactly where I am on this one, too.
But so. I'm willing to acknowledge you and I might be wrong, but spoiler alert, we're not.
All right, on to the actual martinis today. We start with the good. This is from Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air, where he reports that at a House Oversight Committee hearing earlier this week, a top Homeland Security official basically poured cold water on the Obama push for adding gun-buying restrictions on anyone who's on the no-fly list. He quotes a passage from The Hill website where it says, a top official at the Department of Homeland Security on Thursday appeared to break with the White House's call for Congress to ban people on the federal no-fly list from buying guns. Quote, I believe it would be apples and oranges, unquote, to use the watch list for anything other than its designed purpose. Assistant Secretary for International Affairs Alan Burson told House lawmakers in an oversight committee hearing on Thursday. Burson did not seem to be aware of the Obama administration's proposal on Thursday. He also told lawmakers, quote, less than 0.1% of the tens of thousands of people on the federal no-fly list are Americans. So, Jim, as Ed Morrissey points out, the fact that there was no coordination between the White House and Homeland Security on this means it's more for show than for policy.
Yeah, which isn't that surprising. By the way, you know, I was looking at his statement that he hadn't been aware of that. If only the president had, like, told the country he wants this in some sort of, like, high, maybe even Oval Office address. You know, he'd have to do it on, like, a Sunday night or something where he usually never does it or something like that. Maybe he was watching that DHS guy was watching the football game that night. He totally missed the president had been, I salute this guy. I'm glad he's pointing out something obvious. Actually, you know, we had an interesting discussion about this earlier this morning, Greg. One of the things I think is kind of getting obscured in the completely correct, justifiable argument for most Republicans and most Second Amendment defenders that, hey, you shouldn't have your constitutional rights limited because some bureaucrat somewhere decides they've decided you're suspicious and they're putting you on a list. Alternately, you have the same name as somebody who's considered to be suspicious or dangerous. But you know what I think, like we're kind of all dancing around this in this discussion, Greg?
What's that?
Maybe like the list should mostly consist of people who are genuinely terrorists.
There's a thought.
I mean, like, ultimately, this no-fly list with all of these names and all these stories of infants who can't get on board because they have the same name as some terrorist and things, you know, Stephen Hayes and Ted Kennedy and all these examples. If the list, if we really had good confidence to believe the list was almost entirely people who were genuinely dangerous, who genuinely shouldn't be getting on an airplane, people who genuinely should be monitored by the government, we'd all feel differently about this. But instead, the no-fly list and the terror watch list have basically turned into another healthcare.gov. They've turned into another OPM. Like, this is a very incompetent government that makes tons of errors all the time, and it's not careful, and it's not accountable, and it's not responsible, and that's why nobody wants to expand this idea. So maybe, you know, his point about this will kind of get the ball rolling at some point in some future administration of cleaning up the no-fly list and the terror watch list.
That would certainly be nice. That would certainly be nice. And a good coherent policy towards confronting the terrorists overseas perhaps would be good as we transition to our bad martini for the day. Chuck Hagel in the good martini. Mark this day down for that reason. But he has interviewed extensively in Foreign Policy magazine, foreignpolicy.com. Quote, while the White House sought to stay out of the conflict in Syria, the Islamic State's lightning advance into northern Iraq in June 2014 came as a jolt to the administration, Hagel said. Asked at a press conference in August of that year about the nature of the threat posed by the Islamic State, Hagel told reporters that this is beyond anything that we've seen. Some administration officials were not happy with Hagel's description and said, I got some criticism from the White House. He got accused of trying to hype something, overstate something, and make something more than it was. I didn't know all of it, but I knew we were up against something here that we had never seen before, and in many ways we were not prepared for it. And he talked about going to NATO meetings and other people from around the world, his counterparts essentially, saying, what are you doing? Where is this going? So Chuck Hagel shedding some light on what we pretty much already knew to be the case, given out-of-touch comments and actions by the president on this policy.
There's a lot of score settling in that interview. There's a lot of him, you know, arguing that no one listened to him, that he wasn't given the respect that he deserves. We can point out that some of this is going to be an element of bitter former, you know, cabinet official, you know, lashes out at administration that didn't appreciate him. Having said that, you know, his account there, Greg, contends that Susan Rice is the most horrible person in the world.
Right.
Fact check true, right? You know, that's it's not like anybody's going to say, oh, that doesn't sound like what we know. And the overall portrait is an administration that didn't want to acknowledge that the rise of ISIS and the threat was growing, that very much wanted to avert its eyes from it, and that once it did have it, it held long meetings with not much, a lot of questions asked and a lot of discussion, but no conclusions and no decision, which kind of rings true with everything else we've seen from this administration. And so basically, much belatedly, we have a defense secretary who sees the exact same president that most of us have seen since 2007 or so, or perhaps even earlier.
Wouldn't this be three for three in former Obama defense secretaries who have had less than wonderful things to say about him after leaving office?
Well, that's a good point. Here's the thing. Ultimately, you know, when it comes to Democratic administrations, the secretaries of defense and the heads of the national security agencies come in two varieties. One is they're terrible, or they try to do their job against kind of swimming against the tide. You might kind of like think back to, you know, Tony Blair being the Labor Party leader back in during the, you know, 9/11, being a hawkish person surrounded by doves. And I think we can give Hagel, you know, did not come across as a hawk by any stretch of the imagination, but eventually it became very clear this was a guy who, you know, recognized a threat was growing amongst people who basically just didn't want to think about it. It interfered with their worldview, right? Because, you know, if there's evil in the world, you got to address it and stuff. So belated salute to Chuck Hagel for seeing what eventually we did. We saw, you know, where we were seeing from the beginning, but just kind of maddening that that it takes so long for them to recognize this. And, you know, that sounds like from where he sees that we still don't know what this administration wants to do and how they're going to handle the threat of ISIS. I think the idea is run out the clock and let some future president deal with it.
Oh, man. Well, speaking of future potential presidents, let's move to the crazy martini now. And Donald Trump, who is certainly the leader nationally in the Republican race, behind in a couple polls in Iowa, but overall doing very well at this point. And he's gotten what he considers a shot in the arm from Russian President Vladimir Putin, who recently called Trump, quote, the absolute leader in the presidential race. He went on to say he's a very lively man, talented without a doubt. He's saying he wants to go to another level of relations, closer, deeper relations with Russia. How can we not welcome that? Of course we welcome that. So Trump appeared by phone on Morning Joe today with Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough, and Mika jumped right in with getting Trump's reaction to the kind words from Vladimir Putin.
Do you like Vladimir Putin's comments about you?
Sure. When people call you brilliant, that's always good, especially when the person heads up Russia.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, also as a person that kills journalists, political opponents, and
invades countries.
And invades countries, obviously, that would be a concern, would it not?
He's running his country, and at least he's a leader, you know, unlike what we have in this country.
Yeah, but again, he kills journalists that don't agree with him.
Well, I think our country does plenty of killing also, Joe. So,
Jim. And then later on, he talked about the polls, of course, and Putin's at over 80% in the polls in his country, a big shock, while Obama's only in the high 30s or low 40s. So as long as you're a world leader who's got good poll numbers, Trump's your buddy.
I'm sure at some point there's some Trump fan who's making some argument like, yeah, you know, those dissident journalists had it coming, you know. Crimea was just sitting there for somebody to take. It's really depressing. It's really, really depressing because it's just like a non-step. You know, because further than that, it's like, you know, Joe, a lot of people get killed in this world. You know, sometimes they're killed by Putin, sometimes they're killed by Americans. You know, there's a lot of killing in this world. You know, what are you going to do? This is one of the few times I don't have much to say, Greg. I just like, if you look at that and you're like, oh, okay, I really want to vote for that guy. It's chillingly, you know, Mussolini make trains run on time. Yeah, I've said everything I can say against Donald Trump. And if you still look at that and you're like, yeah, then I think you just need to have very fundamentally different ideas of what the United States is about, what we should stand for, and the merits of killing journalists.
One of the big narratives throughout this Republican primary debate has been, who's the guy that can stand up to Putin? Because Obama keeps getting played over and over, whether it's on the Syrian red line or the Iranian nuclear deal or even Ukraine, what have you. And then for this to be a really good thing for the leader of Russia, the ex-KGB guy, to be thinking you're a great choice to be the leader of the U.S., that you would embrace that, is a little bit odd. So more than a little bit odd, actually. Jim, on that bizarre note, I assume you're off to the theater. I haven't decided whether in my mind you're likely to dress up as anyone from Star Wars this weekend, but enjoy it. I'll be seeing it in a few days, I'm sure.
It's actually, here's the thing, Greg. I saw it last night.
Oh, you did?
I did. I'm just going to give one. Yeah, I know everybody's very sensitive about spoilers for good reason. So here's the deal. Wow.
Loved it, huh?
Yeah, it's a wow. Oh. It's here's the non-spoiler comparison I will make. You ready?
Sure.
You remember in 1996 at the Olympics, the gymnastics finals, Kerry Strug?
Yes.
She breaks her ankle like right before her final routine, and she can barely walk on it. And you're like, oh my God, she's got to run up and do, I don't know if it was the pommel horse or whatever it was.
The vault, yeah.
And it's like impossibly hard to do under good circumstances. She's got a broken ankle. She can barely walk. And, you know, was it Bella Caroli?
Yes.
You can do it, Kerry. You can do it. I cannot do it, but you can do it. Yeah. And somehow, some way, Kerry Strug manages to do it and stick the landing. J.J. Abrams sticks the landing.
Wow.
There are so many things that could have gone wrong with this that could have been off key or note. It could have seemed to. No, he really does it. And you can't believe just how like satisfying it is. Now, maybe I'll watch it a second time this weekend with the kids and something will seem off to me or something. But there was like stunned, satisfied silence when the movie ended last night. It was really kind of incredible.
Wow. Well, that's certainly...
So there is a good way to end. That's the good martini of the day, Greg.
There you go. Well, if you go again, have a great time, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.